Okay, a special day set off with the new Perek by none other than Doc himself. Go for it. A good Litvisha, really serious beginning there. All right, so we've got ourselves today. Today's daf is daf memhei. Now, we already did memhei omen aleph yesterday as an unavoidable. There's no way to stop in the middle. So we'll do today the Mishnah, but this Mishnah actually involves us, as you can see, in a couple pages worth of runs. So there's obviously a great deal to discuss here. And it's a very generalized discussion, and it has implications, really, for sugyas across all of Shas and across all of life. So before we begin, let's just read the beginning of the Mishnah to get the basic idea of what we're talking about. And the real topic here is about hashutafim. Now, obviously, when two people own something b'shutafut, we're going to have to define precisely what it is that they own, because is there a way for one shutaf to prohibit another shutaf from using the thing that they own together? That seems a little bit weird. And we're going to have to, therefore, detail the differences in the type of ownership that shutafut provides and how it works. So let's first understand one type of shutafut. So here the Mishnah says that there's definitely a way for shutafim who own a chotzer together, shutafim shenadru hanazem yizeh, are neither of them would be allowed to go into the chotzer, which is mind-boggling. I mean, in other words, this means that if I own something in partnership, I can aser you, and you can aser me from utilizing my own ownership in the partnership. That's wild. I mean, I don't understand. You can't aser me on something that I own. This is like telling me that I can't go into my own house. I mean, how is that possible? So that strikes us as being itself remarkable, and obviously we're going to have to explain the type of ownership that shutafut provides. Now, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Amer, why? I don't understand. Each one has a balut on this chotzer. Zeh nichnas v'toch shelo, v'zeh nichnas v'toch shelo. Okay, let's try to figure out how this could possibly work, that one shutaf should prohibit another shutaf from going into his own chutz. So before we do that, we have to recognize that there are two different types of joint ownerships. One joint ownership is, and that's why this is a beautiful Mishnah, because it concentrates on the idea of chutzer. And chutzer is a very complex sugya. Why? Let's remember what a chutzer is. A chutzer is, which we see in Eretz Yisrael, of course, all the time, but which people in other areas are not so familiar with. The way that a chutzer works is that you have a number of homes that are opening up into a commons. That commons is the chutzer, in which everybody has rights to the utilization of that chutzer. And in that commons, you then can use it for things that don't bother anybody else, because everybody has a right to pass through it. As far as, would you be allowed to put up something there like a little storage shed that gets in the way of other people? Well, Miikra did. If the other people don't want it there, obviously they can tell you, no, we don't want you to put up a storage shed. You know, suppose I want to raise chickens there, or I want to have my cats that I feed. They can prevent you from doing that, because that is not the purpose of the chotzer in the first place, although some cat women would argue otherwise, I guess. But that's the reality, that a chotzer is meant for, clearly for access, and therefore everybody has to maintain that access. However, people generally do not crack down on the other people that are sharing a chotzer, because it is viewed as anti-neighborly, and because they themselves are going to have times when they need to put something up in the chatzar, and they don't want everybody to be complaining about them. So generally what happens is that people allow other people to get away with murder in a chatzar. But remember that that is called vitur. Remember that term. If not, then Gavi will remind you. And vitur, as we saw in the perek before, the whole idea is that we were going stam according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says that vitur asur in cases of isurei hana'ah. So even though normally people wouldn't be makbid on it, but it's still considered to be a hana'ah if somebody is usur to get hana'ah from you. Okay, now, let me ask you something. Suppose the chatzar is large enough to provide everyone with a separate usage. How would that work? Well, first of all, obviously, you would need to provide each person a parking space in front of their house, right? So the parking space is considered to be 4 amot long, along the size of the entrance to the home. So first, let's take off that piece. Everybody gets a parking space. Okay. Now, besides that, does everyone have a patch of lawn or usage? Well, the minimum usage is 4 by 4 amas. That's considered to be usable. That shows up all over the place. Let's then make sure that everybody's got enough to have their own 4 by 4. Now, if they do, then we're talking about one type of shutafut, which has in it the options of chalukah. And that is called, Gavi, please write, chatzer sheyesh bo din chalukah. So if it has a parking space for each home, not just for each home, for each entrance to a home. So if you have 2 doors and another guy only has 1 door, we have to provide you parking space in front of both doors because the door becomes useless if you have no access. So that's a given. A door includes access. That access is 4 amos. So that would be a chotzer sheyesh bo din chalukah. But how about if there's not space for everybody? Then it's called a chotzer she'ein bo din chalukah. Now, there's major differences between this. Because if you live in a chotzer sheyesh bo din chalukah, and therefore, theoretically, each person has their own area. They just never split it, right? So they haven't gone through the court procedures to actually define, this is mine. If I don't want anybody else coming into my parking space, or I don't want anybody else coming into my 4x4, that is actually doable, but they didn't do it yet. So it's yesh bo din chalukah. Now there, I can force the neighbors to agree to breaking up. I can say, I don't like the idea of people parking right in front of my door. I don't like the idea of people walking through the area where I want to keep a storage shed. I don't want someday somebody to come along and say, well, I'm sorry, sir, but we're tired of having your storage shed. That storage shed costs me a lot of money. Therefore, what I say is we all need to get together and split this property. The neighbors don't want to split. They say, we're perfectly happy with the way it is now. We're not interested in splitting. Now, all of you know, anybody who owns a home here in Eretz Yisrael, where this comes up all the time, knows how serious these issues become. So we have a concept called, Gavi's going to have to set down his drink for a moment, or else he could share it through the screen, and that it looks awfully well-colored with booze, so it's very attractive. So in that case, we have a concept called good or a good. Now, either if you guys don't want to split, then I'm ready to buy you out or you buy me out. Now, obviously, you can only do that if you could really buy them out, right? But you give them an offer and you say, look, you've got a choice. You don't want to split. I don't want to live like this. So I'm ready to buy out all of your rights to the chatzar. You don't want to allow me to buy it out, so then you buy me out. I'm tired of this. That is what the halakha. I don't know why somebody wants to hold a cup of ugly coffee up there, but considering that me and Gavi and Akiva are having a good time over here, I don't know what, I guess he's just jealous, which has to do with our sugyas, we'll see, today. So there you have the good or good. Now what that means is that the ownership of this chatzar is, technically speaking, each person owns a specific part, but they haven't split it. So therefore, what they're doing is, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll allow you to use my part when you want, if you allow me to use your part when I want. Oh, now that's interesting. Because in that case, of course I could make an Isra Hana, and then I would say, you know, sorry, but I can't let you be Nene from my part. That's going to create issues which we could solve with recognizing that each one would be able to use the other one's part as an exchange, and buying and selling is mutter. But what about in a case where you don't have the rights to say go to a god? And it's a chotzer she'ein badin chaluka. How does it work? How do we define an ownership that really cannot be legally split? Is there a concept of dual ownership on each thing? Or when people own specific rights in a chotzer, they obviously cannot each have a kinyan on the whole thing. If it belongs to A, then it doesn't belong to B. We do not know of any basis for a Torah-defined ownership of a new sort called ownership of two people. Because remember, the nature of ba'alut and ownership means you've got three people in the bed, and that's never a good idea. Therefore, we have a machloket, how that ownership works. And that machloket is very relevant to our Mishnah. So this is the Rishonim have many different approaches as to how this works. The way the Gemara, Mordechai, please mute. The way the Gemara works out, the machlokas in our Mishnah, and we'll see that there's variance, but the way the Gemara elsewhere works out this sugya is that the machlokas between the Tanakama and Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov is whether we hold of Breira. Now, you'll recall that Breira means that I can say that something becomes retroactively defined when initially I really didn't know. So therefore, if you hold of Yesh Breira, so then you could say, look, we both own the Chotzer entirely. I own it and you own it. How's that possible? You can't own it at the same time. We don't own it at the same time. When I want to use it, it's mine. When you want to use it, it's yours. What? How's that possible? We just made one kinyan. Ah, but we made one kinyan with the understanding that only when the kinyan is defined 10 years, 3 months, and 4 days after today, at the moment that you want to use it, that was defined back at the time that we made the kinyan, that when we bought this chotzer, at that minute, it was yours. And then the next minute, when I want to use it, it was now mavur at the time that we bought the chotzer, that it was mine. Okay, well, I suppose you can do that if you hold Yesh Breira. Now, if you do that, and you understand that, therefore, there is no joint ownership, there's only unique ownership, obviously, I cannot answer you on your thing. Say, you can't come into the chotzer. Get out of here, buddy. It's my chotzer. What do you mean it's my chotzer? It depends. When you use it, it's your chotzer. When I use it, it's my chotzer. So, according to that, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov would simply be saying, each person, when he goes, and that's the language, look at how he puts it. Now, obviously, there's no, he can't mean literally, you can only go into your part, and you can only, there is no such thing. But what he's saying is, when each one ends up going, he's going into his own, because of Breira, right? Okay, so this is one approach that explains Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov. But how do you explain the Tanakama? If the Tanakama doesn't hold of Breira, how do two people own the same thing? Therefore, the only way that the Tanakama can work it out is that what we have over here is a combination of ownership together with an easement. So that basically each shutaf does have ownership of an undefined half and has a lien on the other shutaf, that when he wants to use it, he's provided an easement to his part. So that means that essentially each molecule may be owned by two different people with an easement to utilize, the other person can utilize it. The problem is that easements only work through she'ibud, correct? A she'ibud is a lien. So that I have a lien, if I, let's say, buy an easement through your field in order to get to my property. I don't own the land. I just have a lien on you that you must provide me with that path. But remember that we have the concept called, Gavi, konam mafkia midei shi'ibud. Hegdesh and konamot are both cancellation of liens. They become more powerful than the lien. The only time that we don't have this is between husband and wife. Remember, we learned that the Chachomim strengthened the she'ibud of the Baal so that there are things that he's owed cannot be assured on him. Fine. But otherwise, normally, a she'ibud melts away when somebody makes a konam, or if somebody gives something to Hegdesh. So if I allowed you to go through my yard, and you have an easement with a she'ibud against me, and I make that yard, give it to Hegdesh, there goes your she'ibud. Now, you could sue me, obviously, for the loss. That's something else. But you cannot prevent Hegdesh from taking it over. The same thing is true of the netter. You can sue me, but you cannot force entry. And therefore, in this case, where both of them ossered each other, they essentially killed the relationship of the shibud that provided the other shutaf the ability to go in. And therefore, the Chachamim say, you're up the creek without a paddle. What are you going to do now? You're going to have to be ma to your netter or sell the property. What can you do? Somebody, again, is not I don't know how this happens. Doctor, I see you want to do it again. Now, there's another very fascinating thing. This is something that is nogea, literally, kol ha'Torah kula. There's a big problem. The big problem in the sugya that bothers all of the Rishonim, that the Ran is writing about at such length over here, is the problem in the Psak Halacha. The Psak Halacha is that we paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, according to almost everyone. This is how the Gemara comes out, which seems to be saying that we're paskining that yesh breira, because Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov was saying that each one is simply going into what he owned in the first place. And therefore, there is no problem, except for the fact that elsewhere we paskin that ain breira, at least in D'Arises, and that there's only a breira in the Rabbana. Now, how in the world can we make those two psukim work? So there's all kinds of different approaches to this. Rabbeinu Tam has the most amazing approach in which he says, even though we paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, that doesn't mean we paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov because we agree with him. We paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov for reasons other than the ones that he gave. So he's saying the reason that each one of these shutafim can come in is because they each own it at the time that they go in. Zenichnas tov shalom, zenichnas tov shalom. But that's not the reason that we paskin like Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov. We actually paskin that ain breira. So then how come you can come in? Because Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov holds vitur is mutter for Yisurei Hana. And therefore, since shutafim are generally mivater on this, I don't sit there and tell somebody else who lives in my multi-story building, you can't walk through my hall, right? So therefore, vitor being mutter, it's not affected by the netter, in which case it's even though the Gemara came out that the way to understand Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov is through Breira, but there are alternatives. So that we paskin that you can go into the chotzer, but not because zenichnas tov shalom is zenichnas tov shalom, but for other reasons. Okay, wow, all right. I mean, according to that, if you beferish said that you are assuring vitur, then you really, even according to Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, you would be able to assur each other for going into your own chatzar. That's a drastically different way of understanding the Mishnah. But because of the steer and the psak, the Rabbeinu Tam feels he has no alternative. The Rif says that the Gemara that paskins like Rabbi Hoshaya elsewhere, where we paskin that yesh breira midirabbanan, doesn't mean that we don't hold yesh breira midiraisa. We were just paskining yesh breira midirabbanan. Also a bit strange, but what can you do? It's a stira in psak. However, the Ran has got a completely different approach. The Ran says, it's quite obvious to me, that the breira that we're using here is not the same as the Brera that we're using everywhere else. And now I want you to think about that for a minute. You know, what was your original reaction when I said, this is a function of Brera, so that when I want to use it, then we say the Kenyan at the beginning 15 years ago was for this particular moment the time that I would go in. But how did you react to that in terms of understanding the nature of Brera? Did that sit well with you, or did it sound like it's different than the normal case of Brera? Tell me your reactions. I'm convinced. Yeah, go ahead.
I think because he determines here in advance, you should be referred to Brera as something that you at that time, at the time you decide, you will not invest.
All Brera is like that. Remember the classic case of Brera. A guy makes two Erevs, one to the east and one to the west. And he says that when the Chochem comes and I'll find out where the Drusha is going to be, then I'll know which one was my real Erev. You can't have both Erevs because each one will cancel the other one, which is exactly the case here. So if you hold of Brera, we say that the original Erev was for the Erev that the Chochem would come to. It's exactly like that case. What does Gavi have his hand up there for? Wait, I don't hear you.
Yeah?
Yeah, now. Yeah.
It seems to not define the state, in that it just keeps on going back and forth. When it's mine, it's mine. When it's yours. But that's not giving it a definition. It's just giving it, where it's just to say that.
Why can't it be alternating definitions? But for such and such, let's say I knew that I want to use it every Monday and Thursday, and you want to use it on the other days of the week. Couldn't we have bought it so that on Monday and Thursday, it's mine, and the other days of the week, it's yours? So it would be the same as in regular Brera? All right.
He's saying it's not the finality of the Tchum. That's what he's saying.
Sorry?
Gabi's saying it's not with the finality of the Tchum. The Tchum, once it's decided it's Mukhlad, it's this and not that. And here, it's fluid. So that's qualitatively different.
Why? Explain why it's qualitatively different.
Because there's no final choice.
And why does there need to be... What does final mean? Final means in time. And the idea of Brera is that there's a fluidity in time itself, in which I can.
Maybe here is, he says, whenever I will use it, it will be mine.
Okay.
Which is, I think, that's not usually. Usually we give options, whether it's in the direction or the time or the Chacham will come. Or the,
that's if you don't hold a Brera. Oh, I see. You're saying, okay, well, then I'll bring you another case. One minute. Let me respond. I'll give you another case of Erev. The other case of Erev is that when I decide which Chokham I want to hear, then Lechatchila the Erev was made. That's also perfectly good Brera. So it's dependent on my making up my mind, not on a fact. So over here also.
Change.
What?
That Brera is, but that Brera, that choice won't change.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. I start off the day, I'm going to go listen to Rav so-and-so. And then around Shalashuddha's time, my wife says, he talked forever, you can't go there. All right, so I'll go to Rav so-and-so. That's also
and
clear.
And then it's done.
But why wasn't it done originally, if it's done? You mean only because your wife yelled at you? Then it's when it's done. I mean, that might be true. Anyway, these are all...
Isn't there a difference between Brera and Shtufut? Shtufut, understand, is that each people own whatever it is, cow or property equally. So each money comes out 50-50%. We don't have to come into Brera. I think we don't have to, because once you...
No. If you don't have to come onto Brera, then you're wrong. Because the Gemara says you do have to come to Brera.
What I'm saying is that Brera, unlike we know it, because the partnership can be defined as we progress within the partnership. So if you come into agreements, it doesn't necessarily change the way we had it in the beginning. It's 50-50, aren't it? Now, I want this part, you want that part.
Okay, now if you, listen, everybody's getting close to a feeling that's different. The brilliance of the run is teaching us how to state things in terms that are not feelings, but that define different processes, which of course is the difference between scientific thinking and just, you know, believing how you feel about things. So the Ran brilliantly, and the Ran is really the first of the generation between the Rishonim and the Acharonim. And he takes on, I'm sure you, if you've been doing the Ran, you'll notice that he's very friendly and talkative. But you'll also notice that he is a Lamdan. Now, from Lamdonis, we didn't know before the Ran in this fashion, speaking in abstract terms, right, like the Ran does. But what the, so it's as modernity progresses, the way that things are defined obviously in different and more specific ways as time goes on. The Ran says a brilliant distinction between brera of doubt and brera of indeterminacy. Think about that. The brera of doubt, and this is basically what Alon was trying to say. The brera of doubt means that the essential issue needs to be defined up front. I don't know what's going on. I don't know who's going to own it. But here, as Alon said, of course I know who's going to own it. We both own it. So the major point of the Kenyan, which is ownership, is achieved without coming on to brera. So now the question is, do I need the classic brera where the type of ownership is simply indeterminate as to when it applies here, when it applies there? That's not the standard brera that the actual chalos of the Kenyan has to be changed up front. That indeed we don't hold of. But a brera where the issue has been completely determined and the only question is application, that's indeterminacy. That's not suffix. And indeterminacy, nobody ever felt there was a problem with brera. Isn't that lovely? So you see the difference in defining it properly, right?
Okay. What's the word that he uses?
he doesn't have the right word because there was he uses the tafel versus the Iker Kenyan. Just in other words, it's just the application of this person. That's like a small percentage of what needs to you to be able to apply it properly, is the way that he puts it. But he explains it very well, so it's clear that this is what's going on. Anyway, so that covers the first part of the Mishnah. So once again, so according to the Tanakhama, the only way that you can run this deal where you own something, b'shutafut, that cannot be separately owned because it's not large enough to split, the only way that that works is through a combination of ownership and liens. So that each one has an ownership, and part of a lien that he has to provide and that the other person provides him. The lien part can be messed up with the netter. Masha Enkin, Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov says, it's absurd if you have a mechanism to provide each person with a true ownership. It's absurd to understand the ownership as being a lien combination, and therefore, of course, that's not how it works. That's not to say it would be impossible to create such a thing, but who the heck would want that if there's an alternative of real ownership? And since I believe that Brera applies to this, why would we think of such a weird kind of Kenyan? So that is what it boils down to according to the Ran. Therefore, according to Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov, no problem. And one has no way of ossering the other. But suppose one of them wants to raise chickens, huh? How about that? Now,
that would be foul play.
He's been waiting the whole morning. I don't think he heard anything else. He's been waiting.
No, Rebbe, he was just chicken to say anything else in the other.
Don't try to compete. He's really not in the same sukkah as the rest of us mortals. Okay. So now, in this case, if you want to grow chickens, now normally I would say, what the heck, I don't know. I really can't stand the chickens, but I'm not going to start. But that's vitur. So now, if we're consistent with the way that we established now, of course, Ira is very upset about this. What do you mean, if you want to raise chickens? What else would you be doing? So if the other one, thank heavens you don't have a shutef, Ira. So the only shutef you've got is your wife. And very fortunate for you that she goes along with all of this. So anyway, what happens in that case is, nobody is allowed to use the chotzer for things that aren't legal, but are generally people don't care about. So you can't put your pizza oven out there, and you can't put your big rechayim, your big grinder, a mill, you can't put there, and you can't grow chickens. Okay, that's because we still hold vitur oser b'mudar hana. Remember that according to the Rabbeinu Tam, we're passing on Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov only because he holds vitur as mutter, in which case this part of the mission is canceled. So a lot of things are changed according to the way the Rabbeinu Tam understands the psak of the sugya. Now, suppose only one of them was mutter hana from the other one, not both of them. In this case, it was mutual, right? But what about if it's not mutual? So if one of them makes that netter, so then what's the sin? Well, if only one of them was usher, it's exactly the same. He cannot go into the chutzah. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, yes, he can, because he can say, yacholu lomarlo l'toch sheli ani nichnas ve'eni nichnas l'toch shelcha. Now, that's obvious. Why would there be a difference between one guy ushering on the other one, or both of them ushering on each other? It is obvious, and it's only there in order to introduce the next words. That in this case, since only one of them is usher, there we will force a resolution of this issue. Because the one who made the netter is going to have to sell out. Because there's no way, if both of you are in this, fine, then we don't have to worry about there being some kind of breakdown. But if only one of them is usher, so then if the other guy made the netter, so then if this case would see the other person using it and he doesn't use it, he may very well come to be jealous of Barnea's coffee. As I was saying, this was a jealousy issue. And then he would end up being nichshal in the netter in this case because he sees the other guy. And this could be true in the Kohen Rebbe Ezra ben Yaakov, because the other guy is going, raising his chickens and putting his pizza oven and so on and so forth. And I can't do anything. And it just, you sort of slip into it. Well, if he's raising chickens, why can't I raise my chickens? And therefore, in the end, he's going to be over on the netter. So that becomes a problem. And because of that, we force him out. Okay. That's the only reason that we added this piece. Other than that, there's nothing new. Fine. Now, how about somebody who's mutter hanami chaveiro, v'yeshlo merchatz u'beit habad. Oh, wait, I skipped in that part, the echad min hashuk. Sorry. Now, suppose somebody who's not an owner, haya echad min hashuk, he's not one of the partners. So he wants to come in, and the question over here is that if he wants to come in and see something, see one of the partners, talk to one of the partners, repair something in the house of one of the partners and so on, what would be the halacha over there? So, haya echad min hashuk mudar be'echad mehem hana'a. So the other guy says, what? You called up Joe's tanur repair? Joe can't walk into this concert. I don't like him and I made him usher ba'ana, and if he's walking through this chutzah, he's walking in my territory. Find somebody else to fix your oven. So what would be the halacha in that case? Well, l'chora, it wouldn't be any different because that person can always go into the other person's rishus, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. But according to the Chachamim, indeed, if I could prevent you, I could certainly prevent your guests. That's a given. Even in this case, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, yocholu lomar lo l'tosho chaver, get out of here, man. I'm not coming into your chutzner. I'm coming into your neighbor's chutzner to repair his tanur. Because the same way that he could have this particular use at this moment, it is his particular use to allow people that are coming to fix his tanur to be his particular use. Now, according to this, the Rashba says, okay, but that really would only be where he's coming in to do this kind of service for the other one, and therefore it's included in the rights of that person, or to visit the other one because the other person wants to visit. And don't worry, as I walk through the yard, I'll be very careful not to walk into your section. Okay, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, you could actually do that because, again, of Breira. Now, let me talk about something else. Once we've raised the question of an interrelationship that seems to focus on the rights of usage of one partner to the other, which we're calling a lien or an easement, how do we view a lease? So who actually is the owner of the lease? So, suppose someone is usher on, I love it, friends, you know, haha. So he's usher on this friend, and this friend owns the merchatz. So he owns the spa in town, or Beit Abad. He's the one that's got the oil press in town that everybody goes to, and he has them rented out as a lease to a company that's running the Beit Abad, or that's running the merchatz. What's the din? Well, then it depends. Im yesh lo behen tfisat yad. Now, if he has any, let's say that he's got a share in the profits. And then that means, in other words, part of the lease agreement is you pay me X per month, and then any income that you make over Y, I share 50%. Whoa, now wait a minute. Now, in that case, he still is viewed as an owner, therefore, that is active in his ownership. Or suppose he says, okay, you can lease the Beis Habad. I want to still keep all of my bathrobes and stuff there. So the lockers are mine. So then he's also still an owner. He's still an owner, therefore, in that Beit HaMerchatz. And in that event, then the Isra HaNoh would actually be chal, because I'm being nene from him. But if not, then the fact that I rented it out to the other person, if Eilehem Bem Tvisat Yad, so then the person who was not allowed to be nene is mutter in that case, because even though it's owned by him, that is entirely a theoretical ownership, because in this event, since the other person is the only one that can use it, and he has no rights to it anymore, I'm not being nene from him. Obviously, what's the hanah that I have? Could I have gotten that hanah from you? If we were on friendly terms, could I walk over to the guy who's running the Beit Habad and say, listen, you know, the owner says I can come in, he'll throw me out on my head. So therefore, I'm not being nene from you. I'm being nene from him. That's clear. Now, how about, now this is a piece of the mission that we've spoken about many times before in a different context. Remember, we were always wondering whether there's a difference in the language between Nechasim Elu and Nechasai. And what we always used as a benchmark in that sugya was this Mishnah. As the Mishnah proceeds, a guy says, Konam, I'm never going to walk into your house. Konam lebeit chashani nichlas. Be damned if I'll ever walk into your house. Or your field? I would never buy your field. Sadcha shani lokeach. In that case, if the person that he's at odds with dies, and now the field is owned by his son, or if he sold it to somebody, oh, I never answered it then. I have nothing against your house. I only have something against the fact that it's your house. But if it isn't your house anymore, I never answered it. And in that case, it would be mutter. But suppose he phrased it, konam labayit zesh ani nechnas. The guy had gone into your house, was having a nice meal, and all of a sudden was attacked by ghosts. So he says, man, be damned if I ever walk into this house again. So he's got something against the house. He doesn't have anything against you. Or sadezo shani lokeach. I would never buy this field for anything. So then, metoshim mechoro la'acher, it would be usur. And that, again, as we saw, this distinction is also applicable. We had that whole discussion about Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as the difference between what is usur on the individual himself. So we
traveled the technicalities, but Tfisa Yad, could maybe spend a moment, what is, how does Tfisa Yad work anywhere else across the board? What is that concept?
Well, the truth is not everyone has agreed to the way that I explained it. So some of the Achronim, the Pashtus of Tfisa Yad, according to the Rishonim, is that there's areas that I have a right to go into and use, so I can use the lockers, right? So I'm still going to keep rights to myself, but that means that I'm still the partial owner in this thing, and therefore it becomes similar to a shutvus, even though the other half of it is schirut. However, there are those, including the Tiferes Yisrael, who explains that Tfisas Yad would also obviously be true if I have a business interest. Why do I only have to have a presence interest? So if I have a business interest, then that means that the lease was not that I take myself out of this. I still see myself as an owner. And therefore, that too would give me a Tfisas Yad. Now, it's not muskam for an obvious reason. If I have an actual physical place in it, so then when you come into it, so then you're coming into my place as well, because I would have had a right to walk in here. So then if you wanted to walk in, you could have come to me and I could have said, yeah, you can walk in, but you can't walk in because of the netter. Mashenken, if it's a business interest, is that all that clear? Whereas you can understand that on the other hand, if everybody that is actually buying a ticket to get in a sense, coming into my place, even though it hasn't reached the kick-in point in which I get a portion of it, but still it registers along that Excel sheet until the point where I would get a share in it. So then, theoretically, he's coming into my merchatz, or my Beit Abad. Okay, that would be the pshat according to the other mefarshim. You can see both ways.